Hi, this is Leonard Lopate. You're listening to WNYC On Demand. Podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads available when you want to listen at WNYC.org and iTunes. Rutgers University made history in December 2009 when a team of scientists and researchers succeeded in sending an autonomous robot across the Atlantic Ocean. And it was all put on film. A documentary called Atlantic Crossing, A Robot's Daring Mission, follows Scarlet, the 8-foot-long, bright yellow robot, as it crosses the treacherous waters separating New Jersey and Spain. Joining me now to talk about this amazing journey and the people behind it are Scott Glenn, the project's leading oceanographer, and Dina Seidel, the director of digital storytelling for Writers House, Rutgers English Department. She also produced and directed the film. Welcome to our show.
Thank you for having us.
Scott, has anyone attempted to send a robot across the Atlantic before?
Yeah, others have attempted in the past, and they didn't make it. The ocean is very vast and very harsh.
So what made you think you could do it?
Well, we've tried in the past. It was our second attempt this time, and so we learned a lot from that attempt, and we just knew we had to do it. There's a lot of science right now that is risk-averse, but we had to take these risks. Our climate's changing, and now's the time to do it.
Dina, should I be surprised that Rutgers English Department was involved in this?
Well, perhaps, but we have a very forward-thinking chair. Her name is Carolyn Williams, and she created Writer's House, which is part of the English Department, and it's offering filmmaking as creative writing and multimedia expression as part of English. And so we also have an amazing university in which our Office of Undergraduate Education, which is led by our president and who wants to offer unique opportunities for our undergraduates, has created this platform in which my school and my office in Writers House, which is an undergraduate learning community, hands-on experience for students, encouraged me with my students to follow the scientists who are working with their students to tell this story.
Well, when did you get on board? Were you there from the beginning?
From the very beginning.
Because students
Absolutely.
Come in and then they graduate and projects continue. So
that's right. It's been a 2-year collaboration between an English department and a marine science department to tell this story and to follow the scientists. And I had the great fortune of following the scientists with my students for more than 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the robot that was used in this research. It's a glider, right? And it doesn't have propellers?
No, there's no propellers. We have to do things very slowly and not use a lot of energy. We only use the same amount of energy as 3 Christmas tree lights. And so here you have to build an underwater robot that's going to fly across the ocean, navigate, communicate with you the whole time, do a science mission, and still only use the amount of electricity used by 3 Christmas tree lights.
Well, how does it steer itself?
It changes its buoyancy. So in the nose, it pulls in a cup of water when it's at the surface. That makes it sink, and then it has wings that make it fly forward. When it gets to the bottom, it pushes that cup of water out, and it floats back up to the surface again, flying forward. So it glides up and it glides down. It has a rudder. Every time it surfaces, it gets a GPS, just like your car. It has a cell phone. It phones home, it checks in with me and or checks in with our students, and we give it new directions, it checks its email, and it continues on its way.
So you don't just go straight across the Atlantic from New Jersey to Spain?
Oh, no. It's too slow. It goes at a slow walk, and there's ocean currents that it has to navigate.
Now, you know, Chris Christie would have said it was too expensive. He doesn't even want to go from New Jersey to New York. But this is a very ambitious thing, isn't it? Is Spain the best place to go to from New Jersey?
Well, Spain was one of the best places. They have a very advanced oceanographic community there. And so the same type of data sets we use to navigate out of our launch zone in the U.S., we were using those same types of data sources to navigate into our landing zone in Spain. And so they were natural partners, and we used the Gulf Stream to get us across, heading right towards Spain.
Dina, how did Scarlet even get its name?
Well, Scarlet was given her name by our president, so Scarlet Knight is a mascot. Okay. But as we were following the story, it was clear that they were referring to this robot as a she. She has her own Facebook page. She's single, looking for a partner. She has all this she has a fan club. And so she really took on a personality, which was an exciting part of the story. And when I was invited to meet with Scott and the oceanographers, it was clear that this was a dynamic, passionate group of scientists who were about to do something very risky, potentially historic, And it was an incredible opportunity to follow them. And this is a science in the making story. We follow them. The story is moment by moment, decision making, the emotions, the challenges. And it takes a long time to tell a compelling, dynamic science story.
And now Scarlett lives in the Smithsonian, so I guess she's
Absolutely.
Never going to find a mate.
She has her own exhibit in the Smithsonian's Ocean Hall, and we're fortunate to have monitors showing excerpts from our film as part of her exhibit.
You, Scott, you trained to become an astronaut, and there are times when watching the film reminded me of the Mars rover missions. Are there similarities to space exploration and investigation of the oceans?
Yeah, absolutely. The ocean is one of our most unexplored areas, still is. You know, we used to go to sea with iron men and wooden ships, and now we're changing how we do that. Just like we send robots into space, we're sending robots in the ocean. That's the way we're going to explore the ocean in the future, and it allows us to bring a lot more people to sea with us. And so that's the transformation we're trying to put together.
And was it transmitting real-time data the way the spacecraft do?
Constantly. Every time it came to the surface, it would phone home. So about three times a day, all the data that it would collected would be transmitted back to our mission control center, which was at Rutgers University. The students could look at that data, analyze that data, and decide where to steer to next.
What instruments did Scarlett use to collect the data?
The main instruments it used was to collect the temperature and the salinity of the water and then the ocean currents. Our mission is to look at climate change, how much heat is in the ocean and where that heat is being transported to. So we have temperature sensors and current sensors.
And did you learn anything surprising as a result?
We learned that our models are doing really good. And that was the big surprise for us. We saw where the errors in the models were, and it was due to incorrect formulations of how we took the new data in, and we were able to say that, hey, we're doing a much better job at forecasting the ocean than we ever have in the past. And that gives us more confidence. It reduces our uncertainty in our predictions, and that allows us better to decide, you know, what are the actions that we should do.
Dina, what were the problems for filmmakers in recording all of this?
Well, we collected.
Well, underwater, first of all.
Underwater. Well, luckily, we had a wonderful underwater cinematographer who was not one of my students. He was hired. His name is Dan Crowell, and he collected these beautiful images. We did have to go we flew to the Azores, and we got in a small sailboat. I went with the scientist, and Dan Crowell, the underwater cinematographer, came with me. We sailed 200 miles out from the Azores, and it was sort of the wake of Hurricane Bill when we had to meet up with Scarlett because she was having trouble navigating, and there was too much biological growth on her, and the scientist had
barnacles.
To clean her. It was barnacles, but they really didn't know what it was, but they knew that something was attached to her. And that was quite a dramatic moment for the filmmaking, absolutely. After following this team for a year and a half, we had more than 400 hours of high-definition footage that we had to structure into 75 minutes. And it's told all from the scientist's point of view.
Could the barnacles have been predicted?
Yeah, I guess they could have been predicted. We actually put coatings on the glider to prevent that. And so most of the glider was coated with a new rubberized coating so that they would slide off. But what we didn't expect is that the seams in between the pieces of the glider, there's O-rings there. You can't put anything on those to disturb the O-rings. The barnacles would stick their little feet into those little seams and hold on for dear life as they took a ride on this glider feeding along the way.
We're talking about the same kinds of O-rings that we have in
the space shuttle. Yes, the same thing. We have to protect the O-rings or you don't survive at sea. And so the barnacles use that as a place to grab a hold. As a result, you know, usually when you try to scrape barnacles off ships, they're really hard. You need scrapers. These could just be flicked off with your hand because that's all they were holding on to was that little piece, that little seam. And so that's the part that we didn't expect.
Dina, much like the rover missions, there were extended periods of communication blackouts, so we had to wait. How much footage did you shoot finally?
We had more than 400 hours of footage, and when we got to go out on boats with the oceanographers five or six times, and I often got to go on the boat, and then my students were filming in the Coastal Ocean Observation Lab back at Rutgers. So in many Certainly during the more stressful times, the more dramatic times, we had seven cameras going at once.
Well, since the film begins with some harsh predictions for the project, Were you worried that this whole thing was just going to end in failure? The film is a lot more successful when the project turns out to be a success.
It's a successful historic mission, and the robot is met by White House representatives. Yes, and that's a huge payoff, certainly. But, my job, because I teach at Rutgers, and my job was to work with students and to document the scientists. Of course, we all hoped that this would succeed from a scientific point of view and from a storytelling point of view. It would have been a shorter film, certainly.
My guests are Dina Seidel, the Director of Digital Storytelling for Writers House at Rutgers University's English Department, Scott Glenn, the project that we're discussing's leading oceanographer. The film is called Atlantic Crossing, A Robot's Daring Mission. And is it going to be shown anywhere?
It will be at the New Jersey Film Festival this Sunday, 7 p.m., the New Brunswick campus of Rutgers University at 105 Voorhees Hall.
Scott, as I mentioned, the film begins with some harsh predictions for the project.
Yes.
Did you have a sense that it was going to be 50-50, or were you optimistic this time?
Well, we were optimistic that we were going to do everything we could to get this robot across. The chances of actually doing it were slim. We knew we would run into lots of problems along the way. We knew we would have hurricanes. We knew there would be biological growth. We knew that some of the biology could be attacking us at times. But we figured we'd figure our way out of that as we went.
Because I remember I once did a transatlantic crossing on an ocean liner.
Yes.
Luckily, I had good sea legs, but there were a lot of people who were seasick pretty much for 3 of the 5 days when we hit the North Atlantic and all the storms. This is not a huge ship. This is a teeny little thing.
Yes, it's only 8 feet long, and it has to survive out there in that environment. And we knew it would be exhausting, and then we knew we'd have to have a lot of collaborators. And so we had people around the world helping. And that Atlantic crossing is transformational for people, for all that collaborated on it. And having a robot at sea, people were willing to volunteer their time to get that thing back to shore.
How many of them were students?
We had about 50 students overall working on the project over time. And they've all been somehow transformed, somehow moved by this experience, and they keep coming back to the lab to work with us.
Are we talking about undergrads in both cases?
Most of the students were undergrads, and so we did have graduate students, but the big transformation was undergraduate education. That was really why we were out there. How do we get the undergraduates involved in science and keep them involved in science? That's what our country needs right now.
We're seeing more and more attempts in universities to get to develop interdisciplinary programs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this, again, is coming from our president's vision, undergraduate emphasis on undergraduate education and cross-departmental collaboration. And again, my chair, Carolyn Williams, always emphasized cross-departmental collaboration. So here I'm teaching filmmaking as creative writing, but I'm actually collaborating with many different departments who are inviting their students to work with us to be able to express their stories and ideas in this way.
Is this a new approach to filmmaking? Usually people teach filmmaking as filmmaking.
I think this absolutely is, and technology has changed so that our students are using small camcorders, and they're using laptops and Final Cut Express. But this is how the younger generation is certainly writing right now. Writing is no longer just print. It has images and sounds, and it has multisensory and multiple layers of information coming at you at once.
In the case of oceanography, Rutgers is one of the East's leading university research centers.
Sure.
Is that something that was a goal of the university, or is it because certain people like you came to the school and the school realized that this was a good way to go?
It was definitely a goal of the university. They built the new Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences just in the last 20 years. And with that, we've been able to focus the Rutgers activities related to the ocean. And the big transformation there was that we put it on the main campus of the university. Oceanography is not isolated anymore. It's right there in the mainstream of everything we do on campus. So we have access to people like the storytellers in Writers House. And so our students in science, they can learn about communications and writing. And the people in writing can learn about science.
And how to communicate science. So my students are learning how to work with scientists and how to communicate the science.
I gather that when the program was started in 1990, there were just 3 students.
There were only a few students back then. It was very hard to get them excited. we were unknown. But but now...
Well, now I'm sure a kid growing up in any part of this country who's interested in oceanography knows that Rutgers is one of the places to go.
They sure do. And it's there at the Smithsonian to show them.
So you succeeded. How much of this information is seen as important new stuff for scientists to project future models on?
It's a very important piece of the puzzle for sampling the ocean in the future. We have this unexplored territory. We can't send enough boats out there. It's too expensive. And so how do we do it? We need this new technology. So this robot is just one of a future fleet of robots that we'll send out there to do the same mission over and over again around the globe.
I would have thought in the past we would have had a small submarine, one of those mini subs doing this sort of thing, because you would have the scientists right inside. Was that the way it was done in the past?
That's the way it's been done in the past. The scientists had to go to sea. They had to either go on a small boat or in a small submersible, and that limited their vision. The ocean is so vast, we can't just be in all those places at once. And so we have to do it with robots. It's the only way we can totally understand and totally observe our ocean, which is critical right now to our planet.
I heard a report today on what's happening with vegetation as a result of climate change, although there are people in Congress, I gather, who say that it's all a myth. The plants are moving up to higher elevations, for example, in many cases. Mm-hmm. What did you discover about vegetation in the ocean? Has it changed?
It's constantly changing, and that's the interesting thing about the ocean. It's complex, constantly changing, and as it heats up, it changes the places where the phytoplankton, the forests of the ocean, live. And that affects the entire food chain, and how the food chain is affected affects life on Earth, affects the people, because we use it as a source of food. And so all that activity that we see in the ocean right now, the complexities and its changing temperature and heat transport affects life on Earth.
Scott Glenn was just named Professor of the Year by the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching and the Council for Advancement of Support in Education. He was the lead oceanographer in a project that has been filmed by Dina Seidel. And the students that she directs as director of the Digital Storytelling for Writers House, Rutgers English Department. There will be, on Sunday, there's a screening of this film, which you can find out information about on our show page, this Sunday on Voorhees Hall at Rutgers University. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out the other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This is a free service made available by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.